Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. And as I was saying last week, I'm a tea drinker. If you listen to last week's show, it was about coffee, but I'm a tea drinker. Now, I like an iced coffee on a hot summer afternoon or a perfect cappuccino or espresso if I'm pretending that I'm in Italy for the day or actually in Italy. But my morning cuppa or two or sometimes three is my caffeinated beverage of choice. There's something clean feeling about tea. It just washes down better for me. It's like I've always kind of felt like tea is a beverage. Well, coffee is almost more like a food. And too much coffee gives me like this brownout feeling, like my palate's just been deadened and it's too much acid. And too much caffeine from tea just makes me kind of buzzy and talkative, whereas too much, you know, which can be beneficial in my business, but too much caffeine from coffee makes me shaky and have heart palpitations. And like, I need to lie down, which isn't very useful for anything. I mean, especially, you know, if you're alone. So I've definitely gone through coffee phases in my life, but I think that I finally settled into middle age as a confirmed tea person. Now, maybe it's my Russian roots. Russians love tea. Pick up any Dostoevsky or Pushkin novel, and on any given page, what are they doing? Someone's firing up the samovar, getting the tea ready. It's like the central event of the day. My grandparents, however, on my father's side, they drank coffee, instant coffee. They were real Americans. They were U.S. born. Second generation Americans from Eastern European families and totally assimilated in that regard. But my maternal grandmother, who came from Russia with my mom and her brothers in 1949, after barely escaping extermination by the Nazis, she was a tea lady. Now, she and her third husband, yes, third, the first one died at 25 in the war. The second one, whom she met in Kazakhstan while escaping the Nazis, later died in the U.S. after they immigrated. The third one was the widowed husband of a friend from Odessa who had also escaped to Brooklyn. Did you get that? She and her third husband, they used to drink tea the old-fashioned Russian way, in a glass with lemon and a sugar cube between their teeth to sip the tea through, or maybe like in their cheek on the side. Now, some old school Russians also would use jam to sweeten their tea. They would put a blob of jam in their mouth, hold it on their tongue, and then drink the tea around it so the jam would actually dissolve into it and sweeten it that way. They never did that. They were sugar cube people. Now, my grandmother served me tea, even though I was a little kid, because that's what everybody did. I mean, I think if you grow up in Russia, having a cup of tea is like going to be the least of your problems, and everybody drank tea in Russia. And one of my earliest lessons in food science happened when she asked me if I wanted my tea with lemon or with milk. And being indecisive right from the start of my life, I, of course, wanted both. Now, she and my mom explained to me that I couldn't have both. It wouldn't work. So I picked milk. And then when nobody was looking, I squeezed lemon into the tea. And that's how I quickly learned about the effects of acids on milk proteins and how coagulation works. I also learned to not ask for a new cup of tea in a household that regularly reused tea bags out of a long ingrained wartime thrift. so much of who I am really starts to make sense when I tell you this stuff, doesn't it? It's as if my whole thrifty persona were shaped by, I don't know, a fear of the Nazis. So tea drinking for me is a long ingrained cultural heritage thing, like in Asia or in British Commonwealth countries or in the South. Now, I loved traveling in Japan, where green tea is poured as ubiquitously and unquestioningly as water is poured here in restaurants. In restaurants in Japan, you're never served water. You're just automatically given green tea. I used to go to a conveyor belt sushi place here in New York about 25 years ago, which is now probably a nail salon or a Duane Reade. But at this conveyor belt sushi place, at each seat, at the counter, there was like a little individual self-serve tap, and you would put a cup under that tap and green tea would come out, just endless green tea. You would put your cup under and you would just refill your cup as much as you wanted. Now, of course, if you're served green tea today in Japan, it might be radioactive, but the point is there's still the right kind of people for drinking it. In Vietnam, where I've also spent a lot of time, it's really more of a coffee culture. But when you sit down in a cafe to have coffee, which is a legacy of the French occupation and, you know, one of the good things that came out of colonialism, along with your coffee, you're given a small glass of weak tea to wash it down with. It's the standard water alternative in so many places. Just a constant presence and a constant pour, an all-day drink, an unsweetened, unflavored thirst quencher. And hot, always hot, never iced. Even in Vietnam, where a cool day is 85 degrees, it's just what you drink. Except, apparently, in Arizona, where hyper-sweetened, flavored iced tea in oil drum-sized cans seems to have become the new normal, invented, apparently, by Arizona, and now exported all over the country. Those crazy Arizonans with their border patrols and their immigrant busboy blocking walls and their crazed gunmen who celebrate all of their gun rights by shooting senators and their sunbaked John McCain whose sole presidential run legacy is unleashing Sarah Palin on the world and their lush green golf courses sucking all the water in the Southwest dry like some kind of Republican bourgeois black hole from which water and illegal Mexican cleaning ladies can never return. Somehow those Arizonans got the genius idea to take your average, lightly sweetened iced tea, an invention that dates back to the St. Louis World's Fair of 1904, the one from Meet Me in St. Louis by Judy Garland fame, to take that classic American iced tea, quadruple the amount of sugar, add the mandatory flavoring, like raspberry or mango, to the unacceptable flavor of just tea flavor, double the size of an average beverage can, and turn it into the new normal for iced tea. At least Sarah Palin will eventually disappear, but until the apocalypse, we're stuck with 400-pound potato people and their little potato children chugging down 100-ounce diet raspberry peach-flavored Arizona iced green tea. Thank you so much, Arizona. So now, a simple glass of iced tea, sweetened or not, and I, of course, love unsweetened iced tea, too, has morphed into the foodiness monster that all our beloved traditional food and drinks have become. Coffee is now mocha caramel pumpkin pie flavored diet ice cool latte. Water is now strawberry and banana flavored energy water with electrolytes and added guarana. Vegetables are now fat-free omega-3 enhanced whole grain veggie puffs with vitamin E. And tea, well, that's what this show is all about tonight. So following the trend, tea is now much bigger, much, much sweeter, and of course, flavored. Always flavored. Tea flavor isn't enough anymore. Just like I talked about last week on my show about coffee flavoring called If You're Drinking Girl Scout Cookie Flavored Coffee, it's time for serious self-examination. Tea has gone down the same foodiness rabbit hole. Tea tastes good. It doesn't have to be mango, peach, raspberry, acai, dingleberry flavor. I want my tea flavored and not sweet. I'm okay with sweetened iced tea if I can still taste the tea, but most bottled and canned sweetened iced teas actually contain more sugar by volume than a can of Coke. They also contain more sugar than actual tea, that's for sure. Now, there's a major foodiness misconception around iced tea. that it somehow is much better for you than drinking soda because it's tea. And tea is what healthy, in-touch, self-actualized people drink. Self-actualized. People who do yoga, people who are in touch with their inner selves, drink tea. And that, of course, is the advantage that Arizona and Snapple and the like have in the foodiness marketing of their flavored iced tea. I mean, Coke didn't start off as something healthy and real. I mean, way, way, way back, Coke was promoted as a health-giving tonic, but that quickly changed. And basically, Coke started off as a sugar delivery system. But there's no there, and everybody knows it. Of course, when it was made with actual Coke, there was a there. And instead of making people obese, back then Coke would make you clench your jaws and pick up inappropriate people. But what can I say? It was a simpler time. But let's get to the image of tea. Tea drinkers are fit and active and have peace of mind and have been to India and Japan, or at least England. Or at least they've heard of India and Japan and could actually maybe pick them out on a map. And yeah, tea is really good for you. It's full of minerals and antioxidants and all kinds of nutrients, but not if your average can has 25 grams of sugar and almost no actual tea in it. When Snapple first hit the market, they used to use people like Yvonne Lendl, do you remember him, the tennis player, and other athletes to promote it as a healthier alternative to soda. And back then, I guess it must have had less sugar, but everything had less sugar then. Sugar had less sugar back then. But not anymore, because you know who owns Snapple now? Dr. Pepper. It's not the New York hometown brand it used to be. There's no more Wendy from Snapple. She got caught up in the fame and the fortune of celebrity and wound up in rehab. Now, when I worked in Midtown in an office in the hellish early part of my life, I used to be able to find unsweetened Snapple iced tea in the deli near my office, and even occasionally decaffeinated unsweetened iced tea by Snapple. Can you imagine trying to find that now? They don't even make an unsweetened Snapple iced tea anymore. If you want unsweetened iced tea now, it has to be Japanese. Like the Ito-N brand green tea in those plastic bottles with the pretty stripey labels. I love those. But they're expensive, and I'm cheap, and so I don't often buy them. But I once went to a trade show where they were giving them out for free, and I probably took home 25 bottles of tea. I keep a bag of powdered green matcha tea at home, and I make my own to-go iced green tea now. Of course I do. But at least I'm not reusing tea bags like my grandma used to. No, I save my tea bags up, and I throw them in the compost like a good eco-citizen. My fear of starvation and annihilation comes from a slightly different angle than hers did, but not so different. Now, Chris, my co-producer, who I talk about often, Chris was once a big brother, as in big brother, little brother program. It's hard to believe if you knew him, you would be as gobsmacked as I was by it. But when Chris was a big brother to a little brother, he told his little brother he was going to take him out for tea to a place called Wild Lily Tea Room that used to exist in Chelsea, which now, of course, is a nail salon or a Duane Reade. And when they went to the Wild Lily Tea Room, his little brother was shocked because what he was expecting was to get a giant can of Arizona iced tea, not brewed loose leaf tea in small pots served by solemn Japanese people. If all you've ever seen is Arizona iced tea and you go into a place like that, then your whole life you're going to think of tea as bottles of peach-flavored tea-colored substances next to the Diet Sprite and above the Pepsi with added fiber in the deli. So let's talk about what tea actually is. Because if your idea of tea is something like Diet Peach, Diet Traparaca, Lightly Sweetened Peach, Passion Fruit, White Tea, Diet Raspberry, or one of the other 13 different flavors and varieties that Snapple makes, without an unsweetened option, as I mentioned, in the mix, including the plain one, which has lemon flavor anyway and is sweetened, or Arizona's options, like any of the 20 different tea drinks they make, more flavors than imaginable, plus a whole line of sweetened juice drinks, lemonade drinks, energy drinks, flavored sweetened waters, and more, including two of Arizona's products, Arizona Kiwi Strawberry and Arizona RX Energy, which Men's Health magazine put on a list of the 20 unhealthiest drinks in America, citing their high sugar and calorie content. If that's your idea of tea, then it's a good thing you're listening to me. Now, in a nutshell, all of this fruit-flavored tea is just like high-end Kool-Aid. It's like Kool-Aid for suburban yoga moms and wannabe hipsters and, generally speaking, everyone who thinks they're better than people who drink Kool-Aid. It's for people who want to tell themselves they drink tea because they know better than people who drink Kool-Aid or, for that matter, Pepsi or 7-Up. But at least people who drink Kool-Aid know what they're drinking. Well, sort of. I mean, nobody thinks Kool-Aid has actual fruit in it. Snapple and Arizona, etc., are for people who like to think they're the right kind of people, but still like the taste of what the wrong kind of people drink. And I'm here to tell you that they are the wrong kind of people. So for God's sake, let's get real about this. Tea is a plant. It does not come from a plant. It is a plant. For my under 30 listeners, if you don't know what a plant is, Google it. It's like weed. Does that help? Specifically, it's a plant called Camellia sinensis. Now, all tea, black, white, green, oolong, Darjeeling, Assam, Earl Grey, they're all from that same plant. They vary because of how the tea is processed. There's a fermentation process that all tea goes through, and that determines what it's going to be, whether it's black or green or white. Plus, there's a whole lot of terroir variation, like with grapes for wine. And the terroir determines flavor, too. And then there are processing components, like Earl Grey tea is flavored with bergamot, which is a type of citrus, and some teas are lightly smoked. And there are different varieties within the Camellia sinensis, too, just like in grapes. But they're all tea. All those other teas like rooibos and herbals and all that other stuff, not tea. They are teas in the sense that a dried plant is placed in hot water and infused, but botanically, if it's not Camellia sinensis, it's not tea. Green tea is tea, but it's become so misrepresented and put through such an extreme foodiness makeover that you may not even be getting actual green tea in your green tea product. And many green tea products are made from green teas that are coming out of China. So need I say more? It's at the point where I'll have to be reporting soon on how China's lead products are being contaminated with green tea. Not the other way around. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more about tea foodiness. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Trial and Error by Snowmine on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Thank you for a reason to stay, stay. I could have gone home with regrets.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Now, in a bizarre mirroring of something I talked about last week, Arizona Iced Tea is now marketing tea bags. So the company that brought you hyper-sweetened, hyper-flavored, canned, barely tea-like tea products is now manufacturing tea bags flavored like those artificially flavored, hyper-sweetened, hyper-flavored products. It's like last week when I talked about Coffee Mate and how Coffee Mate, which has made its reputation and its fortune as a non-dairy creamer, is now marketing a line of cream-based creamers. It's like they've gone so, so far down the rabbit hole of artificiality that the only place to go was back up to the real thing. Very strange. Now, do you remember the BP oil spill? Of course you do. How could you remember? How could you not remember one of the most significant events of eco-disaster in our lifetime? Do you remember the leaking oil pipe cam? It was the reality show of oil spills, only without the Us Weekly covers. Now, we still see ads on TV today, how many years later, for how clean and pristine the Gulf is now. Better than ever. So come on down, y'all. Stronger than the oil spill. Nobody really knows what the long-term effects will be on the marine life down there. Now that the birds and fish and crustaceans are coming back, but the toxic sludge still remains out of sight, hiding at the bottom of the Gulf, poisoning future generations of sea life and humans for decades. Well, by humans, I mean, you know, Republican Southerners, but you get the point. Well, think of what tea has become. It's sort of like that. A contaminated, polluted, poison sea of something that was formerly clean and safe and really good for you, but now toxic and contaminated. But always being rebranded, spun, repackaged, value-added, made better than before. Stronger than the spill, intact. What had happened to all of our food? Not just coffee and tea, the flavoring and the sweetening and the candification and the coloring of it all. It's like the big old oil-stained Gulf of Mexico. Everybody's still fishing in it and swimming in it, and Chris, who's from Alabama, would like to point out, still voting for pro-oil Republicans. But nobody really stops to think about it. Just put a good spin on the ads, paid for by the polluters themselves. It's just like the wellness in the schools programs, sponsored by Coke and Pepsi, encouraging kids to drink sports drinks or diet sodas or diet iced teas in the name of wellness. Same hypocrisy, same message, same fat kids. Now, I know I tend to get stuck on this same message about flavoring and sweetening, but it really drives me insane. But that's what Let's Get Real is all about. It's about foodiness. Foodiness is about flavoring and sweetening and deception. Well, it's also about Little House on the Prairie and Downton Abbey and how to be the right kind of people and who are the wrong kind of people. But it's also really about flavoring and sweetening and deception. Now, I want my tea to be tea flavored and my coffee to be coffee flavored and my hummus to be hummus flavored and my vodka to be unflavored. Do you want to know the latest candified vodka flavor I came across this weekend? Creamsicle flavor. Ugh, you know, orange and cream flavored. Now, I find the creamsicle flavor combination so revolting that I can't even discuss it without a wave of nausea coursing through me. I have always hated that flavor pairing, and I think it's because of those sickening chewable baby aspirin that were orange flavored. They tasted like orange chalk, and I remember trying to wash one down with milk, which probably then made me throw up, and I was probably taking the baby aspirin because I had a migraine, so I'd have thrown up eventually anyway. I taught myself to swallow adult aspirin when I was like 6 months old because of this. That's why I hate that combo, and I've always hated creamsicles because of it. But anyway, yeah, creamsicle-flavored vodka for the hard-partying, underage, overgrown toddlers out there. Or Taylor Swift, who, as I reported last week, said she doesn't like to drink anything unless it tastes like candy or sparkles. Now, like coffee and wine and hard alcohol and beer, tea is an acquired taste, as they used to say to us, an adult taste. Add enough sugar to anything and you can get a kid to drink it, but why would you want to? Any parent knows that getting a kid to sleep is the best thing about having kids. Once they're asleep, you can actually appreciate having them. So why would you pump them full of caffeine? We used to get those canisters of iced tea powder in our house back in the 70s and 80s, but I always made it with half the recommended amount because even back then, when I was a sugar junkie fat kid, the recommended amount was still way too sweet for me. And because it wasn't too sweet or too strong, I would drink it all day, all summer. And one summer, I must have really overdone it because I had insomnia for the first time in my life for like 6 weeks. Now, we had no AC in our house, and so we slept with the windows open, which was usually fine. It cooled off. This was before climate change. And when I looked back and I did the math, I realized that not only was I all jacked up on caffeine all night, but like this current summer, it was a cicada year. But my massive overdose on caffeine was probably the problem. Once I self-diagnosed the problem, I cut back on the powdered stuff and went back to sleep. And I turned on the fan to drown out the bugs. I would lay awake at night listening to those cicadas who were so loud, I was convinced it was the insects keeping me up, not the caffeine, but I think it was both. So why do I see very, very young children with giant cans of Arizona iced tea clutched between their chubby paws? I can't imagine that the parents must be thinking that they're doing their kids a favor, giving them healthy iced tea instead of soda. Is anyone that stupid? Don't answer that. So Dunkin' Donuts has lately been pushing its iced tea drinks, too. Still think iced tea is better than soda? A 16-ounce Dunkin' Donuts iced tea has 39 grams of sugar. A 16-ounce Coke has 27 more sugar than Coke. So, as always, we come to that time in the program where we need to get real. And tonight, let's get real about tea. The same way that I'm able to get real about just about everything. If it comes in a bottle, or a can, or a powdered mix, don't drink it. Make your own tea. Sweeten it if you need to, but I bet you'll use a lot less sugar even if you do. You don't even need to boil water to make tea. You can make cold-brewed iced tea by just leaving the tea in the water at room temp for a few hours, also known as sun tea. It works. I've done it. You can do it with iced coffee, too. It's not that hard. Sounds like too much trouble? Just think of the Tumblr and Instagram possibilities of brewing your own tea. Impress your friends. Don't feed the foodiness hydra-headed beverage monster any more than it's already being fed. You have the power to resist. You don't live in Arizona. And even if you do, you probably didn't vote for McCain if you're listening to this show. So keep on fighting the good fight. Just say no to foodiness and say yes to tea. Just think about the kind of person you want to be. Do you want to be a 350-pound potato person guzzling a 50-ounce strawberry raspberry-flavored Arizona iced tea on a beach in the Gulf as black waves spill over your fat toes and still voting Republican? No. Or you wouldn't be listening to Let's Get Real. You'd be watching Rachel Ray do commercials for Snapple's new Rachel Ray-inspired Diet Peach flavor tea. Do you see the difference? So if you don't want to drink shit, and you don't want to be the kind of person who doesn't know the difference between real tea and infantilized, candified, dietized, flavorized foodiness tea, keep tuning into Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. We're just about out of time. Thanks to Joe in the control room. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer. Thanks to Ben Kaplan for writing my awesome theme music. Remember that you can find Let's Get Real on Twitter. You can follow me at Let's Get Real Show. You can also find us on Facebook. And you can also listen to any episode of Let's Get Real on my website, letsgetrealshow.com. You can also check out, of course, heritageradionetwork.org, which has everybody else's shows along with mine. You should also become a member, of course, because we are member supported. And what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, iTunes. iTunes has every Heritage Radio show ever produced for free. And you know how much I love free. It's like reusing those tea bags, but so much better. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.